So welcome to another episode of the Chasing Posh Golf Podcast. Where in this podcast, I am joined by last year's third place finisher on the Challenge Tour Order of Merit rankings, immediately gaining a Challenge Tour a DP World Tour card for the season. That is Manuel Elvira. Hello, Manuel. How are you?
Hey guys, how are you? I'm good, and you?
Yeah, I'm good. I believe you'd just come back about 5 hours ago or something like that from Morocco. So that's quite a turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, I landed on Tuesday from South Africa, and then 3 days later, I took another flight to Morocco to see my girlfriend play on the Elite EQ School, and now I'm back.
So in terms of Morocco, very sunny or was it actually cold at this time of year?
it was very sunny, but it was actually a bit cold in the mornings, around 4 or 5 degrees, and now it got all the way up to 20, so it was nice to be out in the afternoons, but a bit chilly in the mornings.
Still hotter than in Spain, as you said beforehand. Apparently in Madrid, where you are just now, it's very cold.
Yeah, Madrid it's actually very cold pretty much all day. It doesn't get up to more than 10 degrees. So if the wind blows a little bit, you're going to need more than a sweater to be out in the streets.
I mean, this is coming from a guy from Scotland where it's like -5 every day. No, I'm kidding. It's not that cold, but yeah, it feels that cold.
Yeah, every time I've been to Scotland, it's been a bit cold. But actually, in the Scottish Challenge, it wasn't too bad. It was up to almost 20 degrees, which was unusual for me every time I've been there.
Yeah, I mean, the Scottish Challenge is usually in August kind of time. So, yeah, we do sometimes get hot weather, but not very often.
Sometimes, yeah.
Just a disclaimer to everybody. So I am actually suffering a little bit with the flu. So I do apologize if I sound terrible and if I like sniff / cough or whatever. I'll try my best to keep a lid on it. But I'm just glad that you were able to join me today, Manuel, because we've got a lot of things to talk about, actually. And we'll start with a few questions about you. Did you enjoy any sports growing up?
Apart from golf, I used to play basketball at a young age for probably about 6 or 7 years, and then I had to decide if I wanted to keep playing basketball or golf. But the decision wasn't too hard. I wasn't very good at basketball, so I just decided to stick to golf.
And for anybody that obviously won't know, the Manuel in the background actually has a portrait of Michael Jordan in the background. So
yeah, I'm a big fan of MJ.
Was there anything in particular about Michael Jordan that you liked growing up, or was it just him as a person?
Well, I wasn't really able to watch him live, you know, on basketball, because obviously I was born in 96. He retired in 98 from the Chicago Bulls. But I used to watch like all the highlights and obviously the documentary on Netflix and all that. And I just became a huge fan of the way he played and the mentality he had.
When you are not on the road for quite a lot of the year, what do you kind of enjoy getting up to in your free time?
Usually maybe hang out with friends, go grab a drink or something like that. But I usually also enjoy my time just being at home. You know, I spend so much time outside or on the road. And I just like to spend a couple of days for myself, just watching TV shows or playing some video games or just being with my family.
You're a fan of the old cerveza, or you're not really a big drinker?
I'm not a big drinker, but when I drink, I do like my cerveza or tinto de verano, which is wine with a bit of a lemon.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's one of the most typical drinks in Spain. Usually drink it in the summer, but you can drink it any time of the year.
Oh, interesting. was there any sports team in particular that maybe you watched quite a bit when you grew up, or was any other sports not really a big thing with you?
Well, I'm a big football fan. I'm a big Real Madrid fan. I used to be like a bigger fan when I was growing up. I don't really follow it that much, but if I have a chance, I like to go watch a game or two if I'm in town.
Yeah, because you were born in Santander, is that right? In the north of Spain. So you stay now in Madrid. What kind of forced you to make that move from the north to the mid for obviously going to Madrid?
Well, obviously, the weather is a bit better here, even though it might get a bit colder. And if I wanted to travel from Santander, I always had to do a layover in Madrid. So I would one flight, and the practice facilities are better here, and it makes life a bit easier.
And for anybody that won't really know what Santander is like as a city or what how would you describe Santander like from a neutral point of view?
It's a city on the coast, so it has the ocean right next to it, and it's not a big city, but it's really really more for tourism and for people to enjoy, and it's usually very crowded in the summer, where it doesn't really get very very hot. It might get up to 20, high 20s or stuff like that, and in the winter it doesn't get very very cold either. The only bad thing, it rains quite a bit.
Sounds familiar. Sounds very familiar, that. And people and some people might not know that your older brother Nacho Elvira is obviously he's a now a so one or two time DP World Tour champion. Like just looking it up, that must be quite cool knowing that your brother obviously he's had some success on the DP World Tour. Is that a cool thing? Do you kind of sorry, do you kind of idolise your brother in some sort of way?
I mean, I wouldn't say idolize, but I do look up to him. You know, it's always been my role model. I always wanted to play with him, be on the same stage as him. And to be honest, there was a point this year when I was looking that I was going to be on the DP World Tour, but I'm not going to, because he wasn't playing his best. But obviously, he turned the year around, and we're going to be sharing a lot of tournaments next year.
I take it that's something you're looking forward to. I mean, I take it you'd be going on the road together, like.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be pretty cool. We're gonna be sharing a lot of tournaments, a lot of hotels. Maybe not in the same room, but we're gonna be sharing a lot of good experiences. And for me, I think it's a huge help. He's gonna share with me all his knowledge about the golf courses, about everything, how to get along with the tour guys and on all the other players and stuff. And I think I have the upper hand against maybe the other players in that particular scenario, but at the end of the day, I'm the one who's going to have to play and who's going to have to make all the putts and hit all the shots.
And as a Spanish golfer, I am presuming that Severiano was what was an idol for you. But apart from Ballesteros, was there anybody else growing up that you idolized?
Apart from Sebi, who's obviously, the Spanish pioneer of golf, but obviously you have to say Tiger. All he did for the sport, whatever he did in and off the course, it's been an inspiration, I think, for pretty much every golfer nowadays. So he's done so much for the game, and he's helped us, look at the game with a different perspective. It's more of a physical sport now. Everybody's in it way longer, and I think he's the one that started all.
So in the last couple of weeks in the golfing world, it's been a little bit of a mixture of response to the news that Jon Rahm has joined the LIV Tour. Have you got any thoughts on Jon's decision to go there, or can you completely understand where he's coming from?
I wouldn't say I understand it, but obviously I respect it. Everyone can make their own decisions. I'm not gonna judge anybody on their decisions, but obviously if they offer me $500 million, I would take it no matter what. But well, they had so much money, and they've been playing against the very best all these past few years. So I don't really understand the decision, but obviously I respect it. If they offer you more money to work less, I think everybody would take that chance.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, like maybe even myself included, were a little bit surprised that one of the golf's megastars made that decision to go over to live, like considering he's the reigning Masters champion and multiple time PGA Tour winner as well. I was just a little bit surprised about his decision to move over. But I was just interested to get, as a player yourself, like your thoughts on John Rahm. I take it John's a player that you've kind of grown up to like as well.
Yeah, we used to share a lot of amateur tournaments in Spain. I played a couple of times in the NCAA in the States, so I know him quite well. We don't really get in touch that often, or probably hardly ever. But if I see him, I talk to him, I say hi to him. He probably says hi back to me. We talk for a little bit, but I don't really know his reasoning behind it or whatever made him make that decision. But obviously, I respect it, and I respect him as a person and as a player as well.
Maybe as a neutral point of view, maybe not as a professional golfer, would you be a little bit worried now for the PGA Tour going forward? Obviously the Live Tour now nicking John Rahm. They've got Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Cam Smith, all these major champions now. Could it be tough times ahead for the PGA Tour going forward?
I mean, obviously they have to be worried. A lot of the good players are deciding to go to Live Golf, and they have to do something about it. I don't know what the course of action is going to be, or what their decisions are going to be. But I think at the end of the day, there's going to be some kind of pact or alliance between both of them, and they're going to create some kind of, I don't know, global tour with all the best players. We'll have to wait and see.
So just so I'll take it back to the start with you and how you discovered the game of golf. What kind of age range were you when you first picked up a club, and did you have to work at it to get much better, or did you kind of just get there straight away when it comes to playing golf?
I started when I was 2 or 3 years old with those little plastic clubs you get on any like sports stores or something like that, just walking them around with heels. And obviously I had my brother already playing, so it was easier for me to get into it. But what really got us into it was my dad. He was like a huge... I don't know how to say it, but a fisher.
Mm-hmm.
And
fisherman, yeah.
Yeah, fisherman. He used to go fishing every other day, and he had a bunch of friends in his town that showed him the game of golf, and he started to like it, and he took my brother. My brother loved it, and then I came after him, and the rest is history. Obviously, you have to work every single day to get better. It's such a difficult sport. You have to grind so many hours in a day. And obviously right now at a higher level, even more, you got to keep all everything you've worked for, and the grind never ends.
So I take it when you were growing up together, as far as I'm meant to believe, Nacho was quite a little bit older than yourself, but like even when you got to like certain times where you played each other, I take it it was a little bit of a brother rivalry growing up.
I wouldn't say that there was that rivalry, because he was so much older than me, and obviously the age ranges makes it a bit tough to compete, because when I was starting playing at a higher level, he went to college, so we didn't really see each other for many months. And when in the summer we played in different events due to the age or the all the categories and stuff. I would say there's a bit more rivalry now because we compete on the same stage, but there's not really that thing of I want to beat you, he wants to beat me. Obviously, we have that mentality, but if I win a golf tournament, he's going to be as happy as I am if he wins a golf tournament. So,
growing up, you actually, so as a junior slash amateur, you actually went to the University of Central Florida, is that correct?
Yeah.
What was the decision making on going to the States, like at that type of age?
For me, it was an easy decision because I wanted to keep playing golf and get a degree. And here in Spain, it's such a difficult situation. You don't really have any sports programs or anything that helps you progress in both areas, academically and then on the sports side. So I had the example of my brother. He also went to the States and got a degree and played golf at the highest level. So he got me a bit into that and told me his experience on that. And in the States, it makes so much easier to do both at the same time. If you have an exam and you also have a tournament, you talk to the professors and they help you change that exam, or on a different date, you can do it before or after. And I feel like in the States, it affects the figure of the athlete a lot more than they do in Spain.
So obviously at that type of age, going to the United States is a big decision. But I take it obviously being Spanish, did it take a little bit of time to get used to USA in general, when it comes to like the language and the culture and all that stuff? Did that take a little bit of time?
It did, because usually when they teach English in Spain at schools, they don't really do it that well. But I took a lot of, one-on-one classes with a native speaking people. I thought to myself that I could speak decent English, but then I got there to the first class and I'm like, Jesus, I don't know what I'm going to do. I couldn't understand thing with all the strange words and everything. So I just had to suck it up and, get used to it as fast as I could. And obviously they were probably one of the best years of my life there.
Was there any notable now professional players in your kind of year group when you were at the University of Central Florida?
And you mean golfers or
yeah, like professional golfers just now, yeah.
Not that are active at the moment, but the year before I got there, there was Ricardo Gouveia, which is now on the DP World Tour as well. From all the people that I've played with and during my 4 years, I don't think anybody's actually still playing at the moment.
Ricardo Gouveia, the Challenge Tour literally legend.
Yeah.
He's got so many wins on that tour, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I believe he has 7 wins.
7 wins on the Challenge Tour. Wow. I mean, that just shows you, to be fair, you can win 7 times over the years on the Challenge Tour, but still not make it, or still struggle to make your way into the big tours.
Yeah, I mean, winning once is hard. Winning 7 times it's incredible. But obviously, you have to keep fighting, and it's a different competition to get to the main tour. I wouldn't say the level is that much different, but you have to be on point every single week.
So in your amateur career, or actually, we'll start with your junior, because you played in the 2013 Junior Players Championship. How was that for an experience?
It was fun. It was actually my first time playing in the States, and I got an invitation through the Spanish Federation, because they knew I was looking out for a career in the States. So I was looking for colleges to go to, and that gave me the opportunity to show the you know, the coaches in the NCAA how I could play. So I was a bit nervous at first, but now I'm looking back now, it was a great experience playing a really nice golf course and enjoying the States for the first time.
So in college, you were a three-time NCAA winner at the University of Central Florida. What was that like for the first time, obviously, getting that first win? What was the feeling like when you managed to get your first win at college level?
Yeah, it was cool because at first you always think to yourself if you're good enough to compete with the guys and to be in contention. And obviously when I got that first win, it proved to myself that I could play at that level, that I could compete every week. And obviously the two that came after that, you know, it kept proving it, that I could play at that high level and continue to win.
And during that time in your amateur career as well, so you would play at El Camaleon in Cancun, Mexico, as part of Team Spain for the Eisenhower Trophy, which is obviously is one of the biggest amateur tournaments in the world. When you got the selection for that, what was the kind of feeling?
It was a feeling of pride, and I was proud of all the work that I did. I wasn't really expecting that call. I was playing the Spanish National Championship, where I came in second, and I was more focused on the, you know, playing the European Team Championships, which was like the main goal of every year when I was an amateur. And obviously, when I got the call for the World Amateur Team Championship, I was surprised, and I was really happy and really proud of all the work that I've been doing those years in the States.
So as a neutral, so for someone that doesn't really know how things work when it comes to like getting calls for invitations and stuff like that, so you get the invitation into perhaps the biggest team event in amateur golf. What's the kind of process like when it comes to like choosing who gets to play, like who gets the invitation to play these kind of tournaments? Like what's the process that goes through? If you know what I mean, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know the exact details, but there is a ranking every year, and I believe they have a multiple series of events, you know, the Spanish National Championships or a bunch of different events. I don't really know which they are. But I feel for the World Amateur, it's every 2 years, so it's a 2-year span. And I think the winner of that ranking or order of merit gets to go automatically. And I'm not sure if the second one as well, and I think the third one is a pick of the national, like the national federations and stuff. So I believe they decide to pick whoever is playing the best golf that time. And I think at that time when I got selected, I came off a second place in the national championships. I came off 2 wins in the NCAA. So I think that's what got me into that. And I think at that time in 2016, I also had like two or three more top fives on big tournaments on the States. So I believe that's what got me into the team event.
So was that your first time ever going to Mexico, or had you been before?
No, it was my first time. Even though I was just studying in Florida, which is quite close, I was never in Mexico before.
So what was that like, experiencing Mexico for the first time? I imagine it was a pretty good experience.
Yeah, it was very nice. It wasn't that different to Florida. You know, the weather was really similar, and obviously the courses, they weren't too different. You know, the one in Mayakoba was the same kind of grass, same kind of layouts. So it wasn't really that big of a change for me going from Florida to Mexico. But I believe from the other guys that came with me, it was a big of an adjustment.
Yes, so as part of that 2016 Eisenhower Trophy team, I believe I believe it was yourself, Ivan Cantero Gutierrez, and is it Mariano Galliano? Is that right? Or
Mario Galliano.
Sorry. I take it with that kind of week. I take it was just you just wanted to enjoy it as much as possible.
Yeah, obviously, when you get that kind of a chance, you want to enjoy it as much as possible. You want to play your best golf, obviously, which we were doing quite well until almost the very end. We had a chance of getting a medal until probably the last 10 holes. And we came a couple of shots short of it. But obviously, you want to have the time of your life. You don't know if you're going to get another chance at that. So you want to enjoy it, but at the same time, you want to perform and do your best.
And so you mentioned there the European Amateur Team Championship, which you were a three-time participant in 2016, 2017, and 2018. And they were at Chantilly in France, Diamond Country Club in Austria, and Bad Saarow in Germany. So you finished seventh as a team in 2016. You won it in 2017 at Diamond Country Club, and fifth in 2018. So I'll go on about 2017 first. Obviously, you won it that year, with Adrian Naus, Alejandro Del Rey, Angel Hidalgo, Victor Pastor, and Javier Sainz. How would you describe that week in general in Austria in 2017?
For me, up to date, probably the best week of my life. You know, on and off the course. We had obviously all the other five guys that were on that team are really good friends of mine. I think three of them are playing on the DP World Tour. Well, four if you include myself, and the other two are on the Challenge Tour playing at a high level. But besides that, we're all really good friends and we enjoy each other's company. And on the course, it was a very intense week because we didn't really have that, I wouldn't say that good of a team as other countries had, like England or even Norway or Sweden, Scotland.
Even Scotland, yeah. I was going to say it was like Robert McIntyre, Ewan Ferguson, Conor Syme, something like that. Like three fantastic players.
But at the end of the day, a match play, anything can happen. And I think we were seventh on the stroke play stage, and we faced Norway on the first round. And we were 3-3 going into the last match, and I was the last match going to a playoff against, I don't know if you guys know him, Victor Hovland.
Nah, I've never heard of him before.
And you know, we went into the playoff. We both made birdie on the first hole, and then on the second hole, I made like a 50-foot putt for birdie, and he had like I don't know, 6-7 yard chip, and he missed it. And I think was as soon as I made that putt, we all went crazy on that green, and obviously he still had to chip, so you don't know if he's gonna make it or not. But you know, the ecstasy of the moment, the enjoyment, and he ended up missing that chip, so we made it through. And then the next match, we played Sweden. We were down 2-0 in the morning foursomes, and then on the afternoon we again 3-3 final match. It was not me this time, it was Victor Pastor. Going into a playoff, he eagled the first hole and we won. We won that match. And then obviously we played the final. We told ourselves, just enjoy it. Been a good ride until now, but obviously we want to win it and we're going to try to win it. And same thing, 3-3 going to the last match, 18th hole. And Adrian Naus, he had to make like a 3-4 footer to win. He made it and we all went absolutely crazy on that green. And we ended up coming home with the gold medal.
And I imagine still to this day, the proudest moment of your career.
Yeah, by far. by far. I've done some good things this year, but that was like such an special week because the way we enjoyed it, the six of us and on and off the course, having such a good relationship, good chemistry, and it was so fun to be a part of.
So, so as of this year, you're a fully fledged DP World Tour card holder. After finishing third in the Race to Mallorca standings on the Challenge Tour last year. Just to put into context for anybody that doesn't know, Manuel last year had 10 top 10s on the Challenge Tour, including 3 second place finishes. I imagine at one stage you're like, yeah, I'm very happy with how I'm playing, but I imagine at the same time, no win must be annoying.
It was for a time because I was close many times and ended up coming short. But if you take things into perspective, you want to get the biggest amount of points you have each week. So I was like, just play to win. If you don't win, try to finish as high as you can. If you can second, well, if it's third, if it's fourth, but just get as many points as you want because you want to finish as high up as you can in the rankings. Obviously, I could have won twice and finished 16th in the rankings. I could have won once and finished maybe first, but I can't really put any buts to my year.
So we'll just kind of go over your year as of last year. So 7th at the Baines Whiskey Cape Town Open in the second event on the Challenge Tour, 10th at the SDC Open in South Africa, 2nd in India at the Challenge, which was won by Hugo Casso, although you did finish with a 6-under par on the Sunday. So I'll start off with India, tied 2nd, 6-under par on the Sunday, but just finishing a little bit short to Casso. But how would you assess your performance in India?
It was good. Obviously, that was the second tournament we played in India. The first week I was actually leading going into Saturday and didn't have my best on Saturday, even though I shot under par on Sunday, but I ended up finishing, I think, 19th or something like that. And then the second week I was playing with a different strategy. I was 15th going into Sunday, and I just decided to tell myself, just play, just relax, try to play as good as you can. And obviously the birdies kept coming, and teeing off on 18, I think I was tied for the lead, and I had a putt for birdie on the last. It was, I don't know, 20 feet or something like that. And I two putted it. I wasn't sure if it was going to be enough. Ended up falling one short, but it feels good. Finished on a Sunday with such a good round to climb up the leaderboard, and finishing second was pretty good for me and pretty big, and got me a big amount of points.
Yes, and after the second place finish, you'd kind of take that good run of form going into the majority of just before the summer. So tied 21st in Abu Dhabi, tied 14th at the UAE Challenge as well. Unfortunately, miscut at the BNL Trophy, tied 24th for the Copenhagen, and then you finish with another top 10 finish at the Andalusia Challenge de Cadiz. I take it at that time with the second place finish, you were just full of confidence that good things were going to come.
Yeah, I would say the biggest change for me was that second week in Abu Dhabi. I finished 14th, but I was leading going into the final round, and I had a horrendous final round. And after that, I was kind of thinking to myself, like, let's say I was thinking if I was good enough to compete or to win a golf tournament. So I kind of had to make a choice mentally if I was gonna like keep fighting and trying to be in contention every week, or keep working if I was like convinced that I wasn't good enough to win or to be in contention again. So I decided to keep pushing. I was in contention again in Spain to win. I had a bad finish on the last few holes and finished 9th. And then obviously after that, I just, I proved to myself that week that I could be in contention again. And after that, I just kept believing in myself, and I kept playing well.
Yeah, you mentioned a few times there of the you mentioned there of the few times that you have been in contention, either first or blown it a little bit. I take it as a player, do you get quite angry with yourself at that, or are you kind of just like, oh, I'll take it on the chin, move on, kind of?
No, I don't feel angry with myself. Just there might be that bit of disappointment that you win, even though you perform well. But if you just prove to yourself that you can be in contention, it's gonna come at some point. You just gotta keep focusing on your process when you're in that situation. If you shoot 5 under, but the guy playing next to you shoots 6, all you do is just shake his hand and then tell him well played. Obviously, if you are the one who messed up with a few bogeys in the last few holes because you're nervous or because you feel the pressure, then you can hold grudges to yourself and complain about it. But if you did what you were supposed to do, stay in the present and do whatever you could do or do your best, there's nothing you can hold against yourself.
Yes, so you mentioned there in Andalusia the kind of bad finish to finish tie 9th, but like in that month in general, in June, you'd finished 9th at the Andalusia, followed by 2nd at the Cascada Golf Challenge in Czech Republic, and then 2nd at the Blow Open de Bretagne in France as well. That was all in the month of June. I take it you had a sense that that this win is going to come like very, very soon.
Yeah, obviously in that month I was probably playing the best golf I played all year, and obviously in Czech Republic I was trailing behind on the last round, and Lorenzo played a really solid Sunday on a really tough course. I played a solid Sunday as well, playing under par, and he beat me. And then I feel probably the closest was the one in France. I was leading 3 holes to go and I missed the tee shot on 16. I didn't think it was going to be that bad, and I ended up losing the ball to a bush and I couldn't find it. And on the last hole, I went for the flag because I knew I needed a birdie and hit it in the bunker with the... I wasn't very lucky and it got plucked in the bunker and I had a quite difficult shot. And obviously Stuart birdied the last and it gave me no chance. So, but other than that, it's been, I mean, I played great and that was probably the closest I've been ever since. So I can't really complain.
So for those of you that won't know about how Challenge Tour life actually works, how would you describe Challenge Tour life in general? I mean, I've heard lots of stories about how the courses are like 4 or 5 hours away. Like, you get to the airport, get your rental car, drive 5 hours to a course that's in the middle of nowhere. I take it that's kind of what Challenge Tour life is.
Yeah, it's really nothing for what I've experienced. Really nothing. Nothing compared to it, you know. Like you said, you get to courses in the middle of nowhere. You have to take your car, drive 2, 3, 4 hours, and obviously, if you travel with a friend, you can make it more easygoing or more enjoyable. But if you do it by yourself, it could be a bit lonely and really, really tough. And obviously, it's 30 weeks a year. You have to be pretty much at your 100% every single week because you're gonna have another 156 players playing for the same thing you're playing, those 20 spots. And if you kind of, you know, sleep in a little bit and have 3 or 4 bad weeks, you're going to have to make up a lot of ground.
Yeah, because is there any point during the season where you feel like, okay, like I need a massive rest now because it's just relentless week after week after week. Like in terms of the courses being like way out, like in the middle of nowhere, I take it at some points during the season, you're just like, okay, I need to go home now.
Yeah, you obviously feel that. I think it's more during the middle of the season. You know, when you get to the summer, you need a break, because it's been so many weeks in a row that you're it's basically your head needs a rest. When you start the season in January with or February with South Africa, you have those couple week break before India, and then you have another break before Abu Dhabi. But after that, it's just, I don't know how many weeks, but 20 or 20 something weeks in a row. So mentally and physically, you can't really do all of them in a row. I was fortunate enough to have those, you know, like you said, that month of June where I played really good golf, and I pretty much secure my card in that month. So I decided to take 2 weeks in a row of rest and just prepare for whatever was coming up next on the calendar and feel well rested for it.
So when you're on the road for so much time in the year, what do you do or what do you take to kind of occupy yourself?
Basically, what we do is just download a lot of TV shows on your iPad or your computer or whatever you can bring, and just spend some time with your friends. Or either you bring cards, download shows, like I said, and spend some time with yourself. Because if you keep thinking about golf 24 hours a day, you're going to drive yourself crazy.
I mean, it's a crazy game.
Yeah, it really is.
have you got any favorite TV shows or series or films that you like to watch on Netflix as of just now?
To be honest, I don't really have anything right now. I've watched so much, but I watch Suits, the TV show about lawyers. I've watched it two or three times. Game of Thrones, as well. Vikings, Blacklist, Breaking Bad, all that. And I've seen so many of them that I'm kind of running dry. I need something.
Yeah, I mean, I take it you're more into like the Americanized kind of shows, as you say. They're Suits, Breaking Bad. They're all like American television. I take it you prefer that to like the European kind of shows.
Yeah, I mean, I spent 4 years in the States watching all those TV shows, and that's pretty much when I discovered Netflix. So. I've been into that ever since.
Have you got a favorite? So it's obviously it's Christmas next week. Have you got a favorite Christmas film?
Not really. I haven't really watched many. I think the only one I've seen is the Elf from.
Oh, fair enough. That's a good film, to be fair.
I haven't really seen any other Christmas movies.
Oh, fair enough. Nah, I just thought I'd throw that in there because it's like Christmas next week, you know, in the festive spirit and all that. so just want to quickly finish about this season. So you go into August, you finish sixth in the Dormy Open, and in September you get a fourth place finish in Portugal, and in October you get a fourth at the Hops Open de Provence and tied eighth at the Hainan Open in China before finishing in tied 29th at the Challenge Tour Grand Final. But overall, that added up to a third place finish overall on the Challenge Tour Order of Merit to gain your DP World Tour card. I take it when it was all sewn up, you were like, wow, I've made it to the DP World Tour, finally.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, after that month of June, like I said before, I had the job pretty much done. Obviously, I still wanted to, the main goal there was to finish as high as I could on the rankings. I set the goal of finishing, which would most likely get me into the Rolex Series events this year. So I ended up fulfilling that goal as well. But when I came into the final in first place, I'm like, I realized like, hey, I could actually, you know, win this. Obviously, the weather conditions were really tough, and that first round kind of pulled me back a little bit. So I had to fight a lot, and I wasn't able to perform at my best that week after that first round. But at the end of the day, finishing third was crazy. If you would have told me at the beginning of the year, I would have probably bite your hand, like saying, like, yeah, just sign me up for it, you know?
So just want to quickly take you back to between 2019 and 2021 when you first kind of turned pro. How would, in your own assessment, how would you assess your performances first turning as a pro between the Alps Tour and the Challenge Tour, and then obviously getting starts on the Challenge Tour more frequently, but how would you assess your performances in the first few years? I take it was a little bit difficult for yourself?
Yeah, obviously the adjustment from amateur golf to pro golf is there's nothing compared to one another. You know, when you play amateur or when you first turn pro, everything you've done as an amateur just falls behind you. It doesn't matter anymore. You have to, now you're playing for your own job, your own money, and obviously against another, I don't know how many players that are playing for the same thing as you. So you have to set your mind to it and not to think too much about how much money you're gonna make, or if you make this spot you're gonna get 20 more points, if you miss it you're gonna make 20 less points. The sooner you realize that, the better you're gonna play. And I feel like at the beginning I was a bit too focused on that, and obviously last year was the bit of an inflection point at the middle of the year when I changed coaches and I got fitted for new material, and that kind of put me into the right path of working on the right things and having the material that actually was fitted for me and could help me get those changes properly. And obviously a year and a half later, here I am with a DP World Tour card, and I'm ready for whatever's coming next year.
So overall, would you say that you're kind of, although you had to make tough decisions along the way, I take it you're kind of glad you made them decisions now, obviously being a DP World Tour card holder?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really, really happy, really pleased. And I would say and I'm glad I did. I made the right changes at the right time, and they paid off.
It was interesting because I wanted to mention 2020 because you started playing well on the Alps Tour, and you finished third at a tournament which was won by a certain Italian player, which is, no offence, is one of my favourite players in the world. that was the first win of the comeback story of Mr. Matteo Manassero, and I just thought I'd bring that to your attention. That was quite cool that you finished third in that event that was won by Mr. Manassero himself.
Fun week, you know. I witnessed it. I was playing right in front of them on the second to last group, and then I saw him making the last putt and winning that tournament, and it was quite.
I take it on the Challenge Tour, you kind of, like, when you're playing against these players every week, I take it you get close to them and become friends over time. I take it when it comes to, like, Matteo and Marco Pengin, players like that, I take it you managed to build some friendships?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you spend so many weeks with them every during the year, so you create these bonds, and obviously now we make it together to the DP World Tour, and we keep in touch. We don't really travel together or anything, but if we see each other on the week, we say hi, we spend some time talking, and I made some good friendships, like you said, with Matteo, with Andrea Pavan, with Marco Pengi, Scalise, all those players, and I think those friendships are going to last a lot together. For many years, it's going to be pretty cool.
What about Brandon Robinson Thompson, the Enigma himself? What a guy! And by the way, he's a player that does not lack confidence. I'll put it that way. He does not lack the confidence.
No, I mean, he's a really nice guy. The little amount of time I spent with him, he seems like such a nice guy and really nice player. But I didn't really spend that much time with him to to become friends or to have a close relationship, but the few conversations I had with him, he's very nice, really friendly going, and I enjoyed the time.
Yeah, I'm always saying that because he was on the podcast in August. No bias, I promise. it was just to kind of get a view of what Brandon is like as a character on the course as well.
Actually, I haven't played with him all year for all the time he's been on the tour since the win in Ireland. I haven't shared a round with him yet.
Who would win out of the two of you? Like if you had to put money on it, Manuel's winning the wager.
I mean, I would put money on myself, obviously.
No, definitely. You hear that, Brandon? Manuel fancies his chance and fancies his chances against you. What are you going to say about that? right. So I'll not keep you too much longer. Maybe 10 minutes longer. But so in terms of golf courses, what are your type of favourite kind of golf courses to play? So are the type of golf courses that are very tough your kind of favourite, or is it the type of golf courses where they reward good player? Is that your type of favourite course?
Yeah, I would say that the courses that suit me or the courses that that I like to play are those that are demanding of the tee box and that actually just require you to hit good golf shots. You know, you have to take good targets of the tee, and obviously you have to be precise after with your approach shots to the green. I don't really like those courses that everything works, hit it just as hard as you can and in any direction, and then you have wedges to the greens. I prefer courses that are not particularly long, but you have to hit a decent long and straight drive, and then you have like a mid iron to the green.
Have you got a favorite course from the Challenge Tour over the past couple of years that you enjoyed like overall?
I feel like I really enjoyed the one we played this year in Abu Dhabi Golf Club. Of course, you have to hit good golf shots. It's demanding of the tee, and obviously, sadly, we didn't play with a lot of rough this year, so you could hit it offline and still be okay. But the conditions were fantastic. The course, the design, the layout is really good, and I liked it a lot.
So it's interesting that you say that, because the DP World Tour season for 2024, the calendar 2024, starts in Dubai. So maybe fancy your chances there.
Yeah, I don't know the course, but I heard it's really nice, and obviously I like the warm weather, and hopefully I can make some adjustments to the type of grass and have a good week there.
I take it the plan is to maybe play Dubai Creek if you manage to get an invite into it.
I don't think I will be able to, because I feel that tournament is going to be just based on rankings from last year. So hopefully the first event will be the Dubai Classic.
I was getting mixed up between but because the Abu Dhabi is now changed to the end of the year. I was getting mixed up about that, to be fair. Have you got a favourite course in general that you've just played? It could be when you were a junior, could be when you were an amateur, could be when you've been professional, like when you've been on holiday. Is there a favourite course that's top of your list?
I feel like so far I just played it a couple of weeks ago, Leopard Creek. It's super nice. The place is beautiful and the conditions are amazing, and the golf course it's really good. It's demanding. You have to hit the ball quite well on off the tee and to the green, and obviously it's prepared for a DP World Tour event, so it's really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I hear quite a lot of people say that Leopard Creek, obviously, it looks amazing and stuff. But I take it like when Leopard Creek, the week comes, I take it's more, I was going to say, I take it's more about the animals than the golf. No, I'm kidding, but I take it's more about the wildlife.
Yeah, no, it's really cool to just be playing and see like hippos and giraffes and everything, but golf-wise, the course is really nice and the conditions are really impressive as well.
So how would you assess your opening three tournaments? So tied 12th in Joburg, missed cut at Blair Athol, and then tied 32nd at Leopard Creek. Pretty solid start, you would say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really happy with the way the season has started. Obviously, Joburg was really nice. I had a quite cold Saturday, I would say, and I finished off with a nice round on Sunday. And second week, one of those courses that I told you, like, that really long, really open. You can hit it pretty much anywhere. And it didn't really fit my eye. And Leopard Creek, I started really nice on Thursday, and I kind of, like, stepped back a little bit. Didn't really play my best the next few rounds. But overall, I'm happy with how everything has started.
So as we come up to Christmas, what's the plan going forward? Are you going to throw the clubs in the attic or the loft, or are you working on certain parts of your game before January?
I did throw them in the attic for a couple of days now, and I'm just going to start grinding again. Hopefully, probably not tomorrow, but the day after, and just work every single day until Dubai with my coaches, my technical coach, my strength coach, and mental coach, and get everything ready to go.
What's the goal for you for 2024 then? I presume top of the list would be to maintain your DP World Tour card, but have you got any other certain goals that maybe you've got on your list for 2024?
Yeah, I mean, one would be hopefully get a win and make it to the final in Dubai.
Is there any course in particular that's coming up on the DP World Tour that you're looking forward to? So maybe one of the Spanish courses?
Yeah, but the tournament on the top of my list would be the Spanish Open. You know, I've had a couple years that I could have played it, but obviously I had to focus on the Challenge Tour. On another year, I was in the States and I couldn't come all the way here to play it. So it's been on the top of my list for a few years now. And being able to actually play it this year is going to be a special week playing at home.
And obviously with the DP World Tour, it's kind of changed schedule a little bit, but you still got plenty of fantastic countries to go and experience. So you got, I believe, China's back for the first time in four or five years as well. So maybe that's something to look forward to. Like Japan, China, Kenya, places like that. I take it. Is there one country that you're looking forward to going to?
For me, Japan. I've always wanted to go to Japan since probably the last 4 or 5 years. I like Japan. I wanted to experience the culture. I've experienced the culture in China a couple of months ago. But Japan, it's been always on the top of my list.
I take it when you think of Japan, when people think of Japan, it's like you may struggle a little bit with either the language or the culture. I take it that won't be a problem for you, or do you think it will?
I don't know. I struggled enough when I went to China a month and a half ago. Nobody spoke any word of English, so it was kind of an entertaining trip. But Japan, I just want to experience the culture, eat their food, and visit all the cities and stuff, and just enjoy it. I've always wanted to go, and I'm sure it's gonna be really, really fun.
Yeah, well, from myself and Chasin Parr's audience, we wish you all the best in your first year as a DP World Tour card holder, Manuel. And Feliz Navidad when it comes. And hopefully you and your family have a fantastic Christmas, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and Merry Christmas to everyone.
And thank you yet again for coming on, even though you were in Morocco about 5 hours ago. That is commitment.
it's a pleasure to be here, and I really.
And last of all, I do apologize for the amount of times I was coughing and sniffing. I feel absolutely terrible. But Manuel, it was a pleasure. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.